From the main public broadcasting network, I'm Tom Porter, and for Thursday, August 28th, this is Main Things Considered. Arthur T is back at the helm of Market Basket, and employees and customers of the embattled grocery store chain couldn't be happier. Maine Conservation Voters release their annual environmental scorecard of legislative leaders and laggards. And why watching birds remains a marvel for one 90-year-old enthusiast in southern Maine.
And I just get really almost teary-eyed over that when I look at that little ball of fluff and think, you have traveled these thousands of miles and you're still here.
Those stories and more coming up. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter.
There's very little that I could ever add to your brilliant words, your extraordinary display of loyalty, and the power of your enduring human spirit over the past 6 weeks.
Those words, spoken Thursday morning by reinstated Market Basket boss Arthur T. Demoulas, were music to the ears of hundreds of supermarket workers in Maine and thousands more throughout the region.
Is that everything that's coming out separate now?
News that Arthur T. had struck a late-night deal with his cousin and business rival Arthur S. Demoulas to take control of the embattled New England grocery chain transformed the mood at Market Basket's only main outlet in Biddeford, which opened 12 months ago. Store manager Micah McIntyre sums it up.
Ecstatic. Fantastic.
As customers arrived Thursday morning, they were personally greeted and thanked for their support over the last 6 weeks.
Welcome back to Market Basket.
Thank you.
Many shoppers boycotted the chain in solidarity with Arthur T., ousted as CEO 2 months ago, as a decades-old family feud erupted into a boardroom revolt. This, in turn, led to a concerted wave of action by employees in support of Arthur T., action which led to bare shelves as the company's warehouse workers refused to make deliveries. But by Thursday morning, both the parking lot and the store shelves were filling up. McIntyre hopes to have the store back to full capacity in the coming days.
Well, it's going to take a little bit to get some produce. I mean, the trucks are coming all the way from California. We will be getting produce, you know, in a small amount.
Yeah.
I get a fish delivery coming today. We got some meat down there, and everything else is pretty much, I got eggs, I got milk, you know, so we got the basics here.
Arthur T. Demoulas, or ATD, gained a loyal following among his employees for his personable management style and his profit-sharing commitment. Mike Menard is pleased he's coming back.
We're up and running. Everybody's back. Welcome back, ATD.
Menard is front-end manager and happy to be busy for a change. One of his tasks is to reach out to some of the company's 270 part-time workers, many of whom had been laid off for weeks, and offer them work.
Mike from Market Basket is giving you a call. We're up and running. We're not going to work today. Please give me a call back. 2 weeks.
It's been kind of hard seeing our customers not coming in and not getting the hours.
Cashier Nancy Wedge is among the part-time employees relieved to be getting regular work again.
It's exciting to be back. Seeing familiar faces coming in this morning, it's been great.
Local resident Sabine McElrath came in earlier in the morning to celebrate with employees. Now she's stocking up on groceries.
I'm filling my cart with things I've missed from Market Basket for the last 6 weeks, like these crispy walnut praline cookies. But also, I will fill these shopping bags and bring it to a local food pantry just to support Market Basket and give them some revenue right away.
It was certainly a great victory for the employees and also the customers who have been holding out for so long.
Emily Porschitz is a business management professor at Keene State College in New Hampshire. She says Arthur T. Demoulas faces a tough challenge. The $1.5 billion deal, enabling him to take over the 50.5% of Market Basket that he did not own, involves taking on new debt and a private equity partner. In addition, the chain, known for its low prices, is estimated to have lost tens of millions of dollars in revenue during the six-week standoff.
He does have a long road back to recovery. There's been some reports that it's going to be difficult for them to keep the prices as low as they were before and to pay employees the bonuses that they're accustomed to. But it seems like employees are kind of okay with that, with knowing that they may have to sacrifice a little bit longer.
Biddeford store manager Micah McIntyre says he and his staff are relishing that challenge.
It's going to be amazing what we can do, and we're going to turn it right around, and we're going to be even stronger than before. I think customers are going to come in that have never shopped with us before just to see what it's all about.
Market Basket employs some 25,000 people in 71 stores in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine. Nearly two-thirds of the Maine legislature received a grade of 75% or higher from one of the state's leading conservation advocacy groups. Maine Conservation Voters released its environmental scorecard today that highlights bipartisan efforts to protect Maine's water quality and invest in clean energy technology. Of the 13 bills cited by the group, lawmakers enacted a dozen, only to lose six to vetoes from Governor Paul LePage. As A.J. Higgins reports, conservationists are taking to the airwaves to highlight the governor's environmental record.
By most accounts, the vast majority of Maine's 186 lawmakers have a reasonably strong pro-environmental record. Beth Ahern, political director for Maine Conservation Voters, measures her group's victories not only in the pro-conservation legislation that was enacted by the legislature, but also by bills perceived as bad for the environment that didn't become law. More than 10,000 of her group's scorecards that rate lawmakers' environmental records have been mailed out to Maine voters.
Here in Maine, a clean environment and a healthy economy go hand in hand. The scorecard tells Maine which legislators are moving Maine forward and which ones are taking us in the wrong direction.
Among the pieces of legislation supported by Republicans and Democrats and favored by Maine conservation voters were efforts to keep toxic chemicals out of household products and the rejection of metallic mining rules drafted by the LePage administration. Assistant House Democratic leader Jeff McCabe says he's pleased that his bill to send a $10 million clean water bond to the voters this fall was approved.
In the 126th legislature, we had great success with a bond proposal to make much-needed investments in Maine's clean water infrastructure. I was proud to sponsor the Clean Water and Safe Communities Act, and I was proud that it won support from a diverse coalition of lawmakers and stakeholders as well.
Republicans also took stands for the environment. GOP State Representative Russell Black of Wilton fought hard to restrict motorized recreational gold prospecting in high-value brook trout streams. Once the bill was enacted, Black found himself in the uncomfortable position of having to oppose Republican Governor Paul LePage. But Black still led the successful override vote of the governor's veto.
I'm here today because I believe in protecting our natural resources. We need to be good stewards of our water, wildlife, lands, and air, so that we can pass them on to our future generations, that we can leave them in better shape than we find them.
Maureen Druin, the executive director of Maine Conservation Voters, said she wished more Republicans who had voted to enact pro-environmental bills were like Black instead of caving to the influence of LePage, whom she accused of using a wrecking ball to dismantle the state's conservation policies.
Governor LePage has not been a good steward of our environment, and Mike Michoud is the best choice and really the only choice to bring Maine people together again to protect our air, land, and water, and the health and safety of our families.
While the conservation scorecard only serves to inform voters and does not advocate for or against a candidate, the group's political arm is flexing some major muscle in this year's gubernatorial elections. This week, the Maine Conservation Voters Action Fund released an ad that highlights Democratic candidate Mike Michoud's positive conservation record while hammering away at LePage's environmental policies that opponents say threaten the state's water quality.
We have spent $400,000 on this ad to get it out to Maine voters, and we are committed to doing what we need to do to make sure Mike wins in November.
At LePage campaign headquarters, the governor's supporters argue that Druin and others want an all-or-nothing approach to environmental issues, while LePage insists that sound environmental practices and reasonable business decisions can coexist. Alex Ouellette, the governor's spokesman, says Druin and others overlook that LePage sought the second largest environmental penalty in Maine history against Chevron for a major oil spill.
The governor strongly believes that a clean environment is very important for our economy, for our tourism industry, for our natural resources-based industries, farming, forestry, and fisheries, and it's been a very big priority for the governor.
Maine Conservation Voters did give LePage credit for signing a wind power siting bill and genetic modified organism seed bill instead of letting it become law without his signature, as he did with three other pieces of pro-conservation legislation. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
It's 5:44. Still to come, lawmakers criticize the LePage administration for refusing to identify formaldehyde as a harmful chemical under the Kids Safe Products Act. And we hear from a 90-year-old birder keen to share her passion with younger ornithologists. This is Maine Things Considered.
With this roundup of other Maine news, I'm Ed Morin. Independent gubernatorial candidate Elliot Cutler is proposing major changes to Maine's election laws. At a press conference today, Cutler said when he's governor, he'll ask the legislature to change the law so independents don't have to collect twice as many signatures as party candidates, and change the voting process to either a ranked choice or single open primary followed by a runoff. And he said he'd work to address campaign finance.
I will seek every avenue that can pass constitutional muster to dramatically reduce the influence of money, special interest money, in Maine politics through reasonable and fair contribution limits and total transparency in reporting the sources of funds.
Cutler's statements come a day after the State Ethics Commission ruled that Cutler's supporters can donate up to $3,000 to his campaign. The commission's decision followed a federal court ruling last week allowing the increase in contributions to Cutler's campaign. The change will also allow some contributors to the party candidates for governor to give more. Fairpoint Communications says talks are deadlocked after weeks of negotiating with unions representing 1,900 workers in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Fairpoint spokesperson Angelin Beaudry says the company has made its final offer. She says Fairpoint is still open to talking with the union, but doesn't see the likelihood of an agreement.
We've been negotiating with the unions for several months, and we've repeatedly shared with them our core issues, which they have rejected. And now, 3 weeks after our collective bargaining agreements have expired, we remain at a deadlock.
Peter McLaughlin from the IBEW in Maine says the union has submitted a number of proposals, including one yesterday, that contain more than $200 million in savings for the company, but he says Fairpoint rejected the proposal out of hand.
The other thing that's difficult for us is that we have trouble pricing out our proposals because the company refuses to share the costing model with us, and so we're just kind of shooting in the dark.
McLaughlin says the union has filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board saying Fairpoint is not bargaining in good faith. Union membership voted to authorize a strike. McLaughlin says union leaders are evaluating their options. Outdoor outfitter L.L. Bean says it will close down a call center in Bangor in May of 2016 because fewer people are ordering merchandise over the phone and are instead ordering online. More than 200 employees who work at the center were notified of the decision yesterday. University of Maine officials say the president of the Systems Machias campus is retiring at the end of December after 10 years at the helm. Cynthia Huggins announced her intent to retire this morning at a welcome back breakfast event for university employees. University of Maine Systems spokesman Dan DeMeritt says System Chancellor James Page will work with Huggins over the coming months to develop a new leadership plan for the school.
Chancellor Page anticipates naming an interim president for the university later in the fall. We have President Huggins in place until the end of December. But during the intervening months, he's going to be on campus and in the community talking with people, leaders in the university, community leaders, students, about the right path forward for the University of Maine Machias.
The university says Huggins intends to join an editing business owned by her life partner. She also intends to finish writing a book she set aside 9 years ago. For MBBN News, I'm Ed Morin.
This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter. Lawmakers in both parties are renewing their criticism of the LePage administration's refusal to identify formaldehyde as a harmful chemical under the Kids Safe Products Act. A proposed rule, dropped by the Maine Department of Environmental Protection in April, would require manufacturers to identify the chemical in any products marketed to children. The department says it delayed action to give the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency more time to complete a review of the risks proposed by formaldehyde. But at a hearing this morning, lawmakers said recent findings by federal scientists give the administration all the proof it needs to move forward. Jay Field has more.
Those findings by researchers at the National Academy of Sciences reconfirm earlier federal assessments that formaldehyde causes cancer and is harmful to humans. Representative Tom Saviello, a Wilton Republican, sits on the legislature's Environment and Natural Resources Committee.
I want to express my disappointment in the department's removing formaldehyde. I feel that there was more than enough information to proceed, particularly in light of what Minnesota just recently did with formaldehyde.
Minnesota's new law banning children's products containing formaldehyde took effect on August 1st. Saviello, who fought in the legislature to get formaldehyde listed in Maine, told a Maine DEP official that the department had no good excuse not to move forward.
The report is out. I don't know why you have to wait for EPA to make a statement. It would be interesting to review that and see whether you want to reconsider that decision and move forward.
Just to make sure it's clear, we did not take any action to remove formaldehyde from the chemicals high concern list.
Heather Parent is acting deputy commissioner at the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. Parent says the department simply delayed listing formaldehyde, but may still do so. She says the U.S. EPA first has to consider the new National Academy of Sciences data alongside other assessments it's done before issuing a final analysis on the threats the chemical poses to humans.
It would be our hope that it would be sooner rather than later. It would be, within the next several months.
But lawmakers were unsatisfied with this explanation and timeline and expressed skepticism about the department's credibility on the issue. For a decade, the chemical industry has spent millions of dollars at the state and national level lobbying against laws and rulemaking that ban or curtail the use of certain cancer-causing chemicals like formaldehyde. After the department drafted its initial rule listing formaldehyde, Parent says questions came up during the mandatory public comment period.
Associated with the carcinogenicity of the chemical related to inhalation, which is the criteria that we need to follow.
But now, the new National Academy of Sciences research has confirmed that formaldehyde is indeed linked to cancers of the mouth, nasal passages, and upper throat. Representative Janice Cooper is a Yarmouth Democrat.
The questions that you're concerned about, were they answered in the NAS report?
The NAS did answer those questions on behalf of the NAS.
The DEP's Heather Parent says the administration needs an official EPA statement on formaldehyde's risks before it can move ahead and list the chemical. But product safety advocates question when or if such a declaration will come. They say all that lobbying by the chemical industry has caused the agency to delay putting out a risk assessment on formaldehyde for more than 10 years. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
Much like the tourists who flock to the state's beaches, forests, and mountains in the summertime, birds from all over the world travel to the same special places. And 90-year-old June Ficker easily anticipates their arrival. For 25 years, she's been banding birds at the Wells Research Reserve and collecting data for national research projects. Patty White joined her recently as she wrapped up her 2014 season.
For most of us, Christmas only comes once a year. But for June Ficker, every Wednesday, May through August, is like Christmas morning. That's the day she sets up mist nets at the Wells Research Reserve to see what feathered treasures arrive.
There's so many surprises, and I'm always just thrilled with the birds that we get.
Mist nets resemble badminton nets, only taller, thinner, and more difficult for the unsuspecting birds to see as they fly into them. Ficker sets up some nets in small forest clearings, others are in meadows. These are the same locations she's used for the past 25 years.
Have you ever missed a day?
No. No. Oh, no. No, we've never missed a day.
She'll spend 8 or 9 hours here, checking the nets at least every half hour.
Oh, we've got a bird. Okay, see, this is a cardinal, and she likes to bite. So I'm hoping I can give her something to chew on.
Ficker uses a toothpick to untangle the cardinal from the net while cooing to the bird.
Yeah, you're almost out, little girl.
Ficker says she first got hooked on birds when she was about 8 or 9 years old.
My father handed me a salt shaker one morning, and he said, you take this out and sprinkle it on the bird's tail, and you can catch them. Do you know how many months I spent in the backyard, particularly chasing red-headed woodpeckers? And I never could get the salt on the tail.
Ficker's father later bought her a canary, a beloved pet that she'd sometimes tuck into bed with her. As an adult, she got busy. She married, had children, worked, and stepped away from birding until she was about 40. She read an article about the Maine Audubon Society, paid a visit, and joined a birding trip to Monhegan Island.
And by the second or third night that we were there, I dreamt I was flying.
Before long, Ficker trained to be a bird bander and has been doing it ever since.
One of the biggest thrills is getting a bird that is a return bird. And it's a bird that's a neotropical migrant. This is one that goes to Central or South America. And it's actually 7 or 8 years old. And I just get really almost teary-eyed over that when I look at that little ball of fluff and think, you have traveled these thousands of miles and you're still here.
But Ficker sees troubling signs. In the past 3 years, she's getting a lot fewer birds in her mist nets than she used to.
And now, unfortunately, I'm not even hearing them anymore. Wood thrush and the meadowlark.
But she finds satisfaction hooking other people onto birding. Every week, bird enthusiasts and curious onlookers come to watch Ficker band birds. One regular is now a professor of biology. Another works with hawks as a hobby. And her followers continue. 50-year-old Bill Tucker is from New York City.
And this is actually my second summer to come and watch her do the bird banding. And as I've gotten older, I feel like birds are a really easy entry into experiencing nature.
Ficker also has a loyal crew of helpers, like 84-year-old Joan Yunker. She remembers when she first started recording data for Ficker about 25 years ago.
She said, you suppose we're still going to be here when we're in our 80s? Okay. And now look at us. Here we are. We're still here.
Once Ficker frees the cardinal from the net, she determines the age and sex and measures its wings and weight. She'll send this information to places like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to help track bird behavior, reproduction, and distribution. Ficker slips a numbered band on the cardinal's foot and then carefully places it in a 10-year-old boy's hands to set it free.
And then raise that hand up, leave the bird on the... Open your fingers. Open them all up. There you go. Very good.
Excellent. At 90 years old and a quarter century into banding birds at the Wells Research Reserve, Ficker admits she wonders if it's a good time to call it quits.
I think, oh, why am I still doing this? I'm getting too old. And then I have such a good time. I think, well, I've got to keep going.
Even though this particular banding project is over for the season, she'll keep going this fall with another one. Instead of waking early, she'll stay up late to band saw-whet owls. Icing, she says, on that Christmas cake. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
It's 3 minutes to six now. Time to check the weather outlook with Paul Cousins.
Canadian high pressure will be in command through the next 36 hours. All great news as the air continues to dry out. Isolated showers north and east of Machias to Frenchville will vanish tonight. Skies clear for much of Maine. Temperatures settle smartly. Low 40s north, mid-50s south. Tomorrow, picture postcard perfect. Unlimited sunshine from stem to stern. Near 70 in the St. John Valley, mid-70s Portland west and south. We'll launch the holiday weekend with respectable weather Saturday. Northern and western Maine mostly cloudy. A few sunny intervals throughout central and down east Maine. And for southern Maine, look for an even blend of filtered sun and clouds. Low 70s north, upper 70s south. The weather becomes dicier Sunday as a front sags into northern Maine. Expect patchy morning fog, especially down east, and it will be humid. Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. The focus throughout the interior in the afternoon. Low 70s north, low 80s south. Labor Day Monday, a mix of sun and clouds, sticky with scattered afternoon showers and thunderstorms, but not a washout. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
That's Maine Things Considered for this Thursday, August 28th. We had production help from Susan Sharon, Barbara Caridi, Nora Flaherty, and Anne Mostu at WGBH in Boston. I'm Tom Porter. Thanks for listening.